seriously popular.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The former nurse, Lucy Letby, has been found guilty
of murdering 7 babies and attempting to kill 6 others
at the Countess of Chester Hospital.
Between June 2015 and June 2016,
babies who seemed to be doing reasonably well would suddenly collapse. Lucy Letby was the common factor.
The verdicts make the 33-year-old
Britain's most prolific baby killer.
This was a podcast about one of the most anticipated criminal trials for years. It's now a podcast about one of the worst serial killers in modern times. At 12:52 p.m. on Friday, August the 18th, 2023, we brought you the news that a neonatal nurse was guilty of killing babies in her care.
After a trial lasting for over 10 months and more than 110 hours of painstaking deliberation, the jury decided that Lucy Letby murdered 7 babies at the Countess of Chester Hospital and she tried to kill 6 more.
She was cleared of 2 further charges of attempted murder and the jury could not reach verdicts on 6 further allegations.
I'm Liz Hull, Northern correspondent for The Mail. I've been in court throughout and have reported on the case as it developed.
And I'm Caroline Cheatham, a broadcast journalist. Every week we've examined what's happened and brought you the details behind the headlines.
This is the trial of Lucy Letby.
So in our verdict episode, which outlined the guilty verdicts in this case against Lucy Letby, we played you a few clips of some of the interviews that we've had with the detectives who've worked on this case for the past 6 years.
Yeah, so we've spoken to many of the senior officers from Cheshire Police who were involved in this investigation, and they were kind enough to give us their time and sit down and talk to us about exactly how she was brought to justice.
One of the most interesting interviews that we did was with the detective who sat opposite Lucy Letby, questioning her for over 20 hours.
Welcome to episode 54, Questioning a Killer.
So, Liz, as we've said and as we know, you have spent pretty much every day in Court 7 at Manchester Crown Court listening to all of this evidence unfold. One of the most anticipated days in the trial came around 7 months in, and that was the day Lucy Letby started to give evidence in her defence, something we didn't think she was going to do.
Yeah, we weren't sure. You might remember we talked about this on the podcast earlier on. Nobody was really sure whether she would actually go into the witness box and be questioned by her, Casey, and the prosecution, Casey, but she did. She decided that she would give evidence, and it's fair to say that that was the first time that most people, certainly many of the journalists and no doubt all the public that were watching in Court 8, heard her speak for the first time. And it was really, really intriguing. And we were all interested to see exactly how she would come across.
But one person who had heard her speak at length by that point was Detective Sergeant Danielle Stonier. She was the officer who spent hour after hour interviewing Lucy Letby when she was arrested. And in our exclusive interview with Danielle, she talks us through what it was like to question someone that she knew could go down in history as one of the worst murderers in modern times.
So I'm Detective Sergeant Danielle Stonier, working on Operation Hummingbird, and I've been involved in the investigation since 2018 as a family liaison officer, but also the interviewing officer for Lucy Letby.
So we were really interested to know a little bit more about that whole experience.
What was she like in those interviews? She's been quite cold and quite controlled in the witness box, she seemed to us. I'm interested to know whether that's what she was like in the police station as well.
I was involved in the interview process for the interviews that took place in 2019 and then again in 2020. Back in 2019 was the very first time I met her. She was arrested and brought into police custody. And I was actually standing in the custody suite when she was brought in by the arresting officers. And I'd say that's the first time I'd seen her in person. I was really thinking about what the next couple of hours, couple of days were going to entail. And obviously you look at a person and think, right, this is going to be the person who I'm going to be spending time with, asking questions and obviously finding out more about her involvement at that time, whether she was involved or wasn't in what she'd been arrested for. It was quite surreal to see her in person. She'd already been interviewed, so I had watched some of the previous interviews for a bit of experience, so I could see how she would react in questions. That doesn't mean to say that she was going to present the same again, bearing in mind she already knew by this point what we were investigating and knew herself any involvement that she'd had. Again, I'd say from watching her and then to meeting her, it was surreal, to be honest.
You said you had your interview head on, but I wonder, how do you prepare for something like that? What's the training? You, at that point, 2019, you knew what you were looking at. You'd had the evidence back from the medical experts to say inflicted harm, so you knew what this might be becoming. So this is high stakes, isn't it?
So I'm fortunate that with previous experience within the police, I've interviewed on a number of cases. I worked on the major investigation team, which predominantly dealt with murder investigation, homicides. So preparation is definitely the key. As you say, you know, we had the evidence come through from all the medical experts. So we, myself and my colleague, had spent weeks preparing for these interviews. So we read every single statement. We'd looked at all the medical records. So there is a lot of planning that goes into the interviews because it is a really intense process. You know, you're in quite a small room. She's got a solicitor present. There's two interviewing officers.
Although she's spoken the first time round, you don't know that she's going to speak the second time round. She could just go no comment, like a lot of people do.
Part of our planning process is looking at what may happen. So, you know, first thing, is she going to talk? You know, is she going to answer all the questions we put to her? Or is she going to only answer a couple? And as you say, then go no comment, which they aren't really entitled to do. But we, as interviewing officers, are still entitled to continue asking those questions, even if she chooses to go no comment. Because the way we see it is, she may then decide for whatever reason to answer one particular question, whatever that could be. It may trigger something for her, or she thinks, actually, I do want to talk to you about that particular area or topic or answer that question. But the rest of it, I don't want to.
And the experience, this particular one, 2019, 2020, she spoke to you?
She did, yeah, she did. She spoke to us right from the very off, really, from the first question that we posed to her. On both sets of interviews, she spoke. And from that point, you kind of think, well, if she's spoken now, she is going to continue to speak throughout.
Why do you think she spoke to you? That's what I want to know. A lot of people who are facing such serious charges just don't speak to the police, do they? And she gave evidence in the witness box, which, you know, again, a lot of people might have been quite surprised by.
I think what we have to remember is, obviously, we're there as interviewing officers, but we're there as investigators as well. And so for me, you know, we're putting the evidence to you, and this is your opportunity to tell us any involvement you've had or not had. You know, so it's like, if you're saying to me, this is not me, I am not responsible that, you know, for the allegations that you're putting towards me and the evidence you're giving me, that is not me. I have not done those things. Well, do you know what? Okay, tell me what lines of inquiry to follow to prove that you aren't involved. So you kind of make it a two-way thing, really. You know, you're letting them know why we think they may have involvement, but also, right, okay, then, if it isn't you, you tell us. Tell us where you were during these times, or tell us where to go to look for that bit of evidence that would assist in proving your innocence. Mm. And so I think, in answer to your question, is why do I think she spoke? I think she potentially spoke because she gave full accounts in the first set of interviews, were then put into her more kind of witness statements and the medical evidence. And I think she obviously wants to hear that. Potentially, if she was going to go no comment, were we going to disclose further information? I don't know. You know, she's still,
yes,
absolutely. So, you know, we may then be more inclined to say, well, okay, well, you know, such and such a person has said this, you know, well, tell us why they would have said that then.
What we've said, Liz, from being in court and just watching her give evidence is just that calm, not easily rattled. What was the demeanour and was it surprising?
So the Lucy Letby you saw in court giving evidence, for me, was the Lucy Letby I interviewed. Her tone, her approach to answering the questions, even so much as kind of the pauses that she gave as well, was very much the same. You know, some of the evidence and the statements that we were putting to her are really, really graphic in detail. You know, and for me, kind of the allegations in itself are horrific. Mm. Some people would be flipping the tables, throwing the chairs, banging the doors down, saying, you know, look, you need to go and speak to such and such, you know, I shouldn't be here, you know, that this is completely wrong. Whereas she was calm, she was quite cool about it. She answered the questions. She was confident. She talked, but for me, there was little emotion. But what we have to be careful of as interviewing officers is you can't read too much into that because everybody reacts so differently, as we said before.
Did she tell you anything or give you anything that you thought, I think we might just have something there?
In all honesty, I don't. You know, particularly if you're looking at the way she's reacting to hearing the evidence, and particularly this is like her colleagues, you know, that she's worked with that have provided evidence and, you know, discussing, you know, potentially her involvement in murder and attempted murders, you know, and hearing that about your own colleagues. If you aren't responsible, like, I don't know how I would feel, you know, and for me, you kind of look at her and, as I say, there was just nothing from her. She knew the severity of what, you know, she's potentially been alleged of doing. For me, you'd then start to feel the walls closing in a little bit.
She knows that you haven't gone away and thought, oh, there's nothing in this. You know, you're arresting her a second time, then a third time.
Yeah.
What was she like the third time when you got to the kind of charging point?
You have to read out, obviously, the date, the baby that's involved, the allegation, and then you read out the act and section. So imagine doing that on 22 separate occasions. And after each one, she has to acknowledge the charge. You know, you have to stand up and listen as these have been read out.
But a lot of people crumple to the floor, do they?
Absolutely. Yeah. You see all kinds of emotions. You know, you do have people who immediately, the natural thing to do is to cry. You know, the natural thing is to do is to cry, and then it becomes uncontrollable. You know, you have other people who will almost just put the fingers in their ears and just completely ignore it and show no interest in it whatsoever. It's the same Lucy Letby we've seen. It's the same Lucy Letby. She has this ability to mentally switch off. I have got to say, these interviews with Lucy Letby has been like nothing I've ever interviewed for before. Nothing. You know, I think it was intense. I think it was challenging at times. I think I certainly felt the pressure, you know, because for us, we have to remain confident, calm. We have to remain particularly focused, you know, and as the amount of time goes on, you naturally become more weary, you know, but your adrenaline is pumping. Oh God, throughout the whole time, because with every answer she gives, like, your mind's ticking, like, well, it's like, where am I going to go with this next question? And then also you're thinking, okay, how is that going to fit into the investigation now? What do, you know, later down the line, does that give us some more lines of inquiries to do? Does that help prove or disprove her involvement?
She killed 3 babies in a fortnight in June 2015, and people started asking a few questions, but nobody put 2 and 2 together, really. And then as the year went on, more and more babies started collapsing. And, you know, there was a bit of suspicion about her, but she wasn't ever pulled to one side and said, we've noticed you're on duty every single time. So, you know, who knows what she was thinking. And I actually think afterwards, you know, when she's moved into the admin role, she has the gumption and the bravado almost to put in a grievance.
What you've got to remember about Lucy Letby is, and we've seen that in the text messages and the Facebook messages, she was at the time a valued member of staff. She was in the thick of it all the time. She was receiving praise, you know, by her colleagues. Families appreciated her time and help looking after their babies. She was always in a position, you know, if somebody had phoned in sick or they needed extra shifts covering, it seems to me that, you know, Lucy Letby was somebody that you could go to and you know, you'd be sure that she'd turn up and she'd be available. And I think all this gave her the confidence and that she was a valued member at that time of the team.
Well, actually, what you've just described, which is the most ironic thing when you think about it, is that she was a safe pair of hands for them.
Yeah, but with a safe pair of hands comes opportunity. It's that thing, isn't it? You know, you get away with something for so long, do you become more confident in the acts that you're doing?
In that situation, you trust them completely.
Yeah, absolutely. You would never suspect that your colleague was harming babies, particularly in a neonatal unit. You know, every parent that entered that department is vulnerable.
Yeah.
They're entirely in the hands of those staff, you know, the professionals, and they take it for granted almost that they're going to have their best interests at heart and they're going to help their baby as much as possible. And at the time, Lucy Letby was going to be that person.
The parents is bad enough, but also the members of staff that, you know, have to carry on working and have to carry on providing treatment for these babies now.
But also, same members of staff who saved so many of these babies' lives as well. How traumatic is that?
Yeah. It's horrific. It is absolutely horrific. And you do have to feel for her colleagues. They must feel that their trust, their judgment as well, you know, because they would never suspect. And they think, you know what, they may think, you know, I'm quite a good judge of character and I've got trust and confidence in my colleagues. And particularly a lot of those times, you know, we've heard the evidence of collapses and you know, when resuscitation's involved. And I wouldn't dread to think what the atmosphere must have been like in those nurseries when they are resuscitating, you know, a baby. It must be horrific. And everybody's got a role and they're all pulling together and working. And Lucy Letby was in the thick of it. And the thought of that, thinking that, well, actually, she put that baby in that position in the first place, but then is a really key role in trying to revive them.
But, you know, it took some of them a long time to accept that she was responsible because they just didn't want to believe it because she pulled the wool over everyone's eyes.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, for me, Lucy Letby is quite indescribable. I would say that if you were to walk past her in the street, there's nothing distinctive about her. For me, she wouldn't particularly stand out. And again, is that why she's allowed herself the opportunity to have done what she's done, you know, because she's kind of blended in so well. She's blended into that neonatal unit, you know. She's made friends with some of the families, you know, the colleagues, you know, and she's always keeping herself abreast of what was going on a day-to-day basis. Even when she wasn't on duty, you know, when she was off duty, I'm quite confident you could have said to her at any point, right, what babies you've got on this unit at this time and who's caring for them? She was always in the thick of it. And, you know, her life was being a neonatal nurse. been proven guilty and being held responsible for one thing, but the one thing Lucy Letby will always hold is the why, and only she can ever answer that. And I think that's the most difficult and hard thing for the families to live with, because that is the one thing they want to know is why. Yeah. You know, what you've got to bear in mind is some of these families initially was thinking, well, you know, is it me? You know, is it about us as parents?
Absolutely. Push past her in the corridor. You'd be constantly thinking something that you did while you were there.
Well, like I say, you know, these, you know, parents have been through, you know, a hard time with pregnancy and then obviously labour and then actually giving birth and then realising that your baby's poorly. You know, what that must do to you, kind of, you know, your mental state and your emotions. And that's what I mean. It makes you vulnerable. It makes you so vulnerable. And so they're thinking, you know, have I said something to her? Have I upset her? Have I been overbearing? Have I been challenging? You know.
I've never even considered that the parents might blame themselves for almost offending her or upsetting her or making her angry. So she targeted their child.
Yeah. I think parents, like you say, are just completely racking their brains as to think why would anybody, you know, I'm not saying, even you could take it as far as not even a nurse, why would anybody, another human being, harm a baby? Why would anybody do that?
I think you've done 18 years in the force and 10 years as an interviewer. And I know you've interviewed some pretty high profile, fairly notorious people, as well as Lucy Letby. I wonder whether you could talk us through a few of those.
Yes. So two that particularly stick in my mind. One is Barry Bennell. He was a football coach working at Crewe Alexander. He committed horrendous sexual offences. He was a serial perpetrator. There was, you know, a large number of victims involved. And so when he was arrested, obviously his interviews were conducted over a number of days and a number of hours. They were really challenging interviews to do with him. Another one that sticks in mind is Ian Nord. Mm. He was a police officer at the time when he committed, again, horrific sexual offences, and again was a serial perpetrator, a serial offender. And also those interviews, yeah, took place over several days, you know, which are hard and the challenging. You know, there's a lot of information that you're trying to process during those interviews. You're constantly thinking about the next questions that you're going to ask and weighing up the answers that you're going to give, and are you going to take the interview in a slightly different direction? It does get tiring after a while just because you're so focused and concentrating.
I understand it's intense and it's stressful, and you're constantly, you know, listening and thinking of what's next and what the aim of this interview is. But emotionally, as a human being, you've obviously interviewed some pretty horrible people. Do you just kind of, I don't know, put it in a box? Do you just put your professional head on and then go home and use somebody else? Or how do you, is there ways of dealing with being surrounded by pretty vile human beings?
I suppose everybody deals with it in different ways and has different coping mechanisms. As you say, you know, when I'm in work, you have your professional head on there. You're there to kind of do your job, and particularly you want to do it to your best of your ability. And part of that for me is kind of having the ability to switch on and off. So for me, kind of when I leave it at the end of my shift, whenever my day is, it's when I'm driving home, you know, in the moment I walk through the door, I am able to switch off and carry on with my home life. That always doesn't happen. You know, sometimes particularly if you've had long days, you know, and as you say, some of the stuff that I'm dealing with or interviewing over, it is hard. So you just have to have time to kind of process it. Yeah. And then move on. It isn't always the case and isn't always as easy to do. But over the years, I've kind of worked out kind of coping mechanisms and strategies, and I do have the ability to do that.
And obviously, in this case, Lucy Letby's case, she was interviewed for, I think I totted it up, it was over 21 hours, over 8 days, three different times. So that must be pretty intense and exhausting.
Yeah, it was. It was. We were prepared, though. We knew that, you know, she was going to be interviewed for a large number of hours. I suppose part of that was dependent on how much she was going to talk. You know, if she wasn't going to engage with us or give us as much information as she did, naturally that would have cut the interview process down. But we were expecting to spend a lot of time with her. You know, planning and preparation is the key for that. But yeah, it was hard. And particularly as we were getting to the end of the process, it was difficult. But you know, your adrenaline and whatever else kind of keeps you going with that, really.
And obviously you played Lucy Letby in the kind of role play in the courtroom. So you almost flipped your role, didn't you? So the Nick Johnson Casey played you, essentially, asking the questions, and you were asked to be Lucy Letby in the courtroom for the purpose of the jury so they could hear her interviews. And just tell us about that. And she actually didn't really want you there, did she?
When we started reading out the transcripts, as you said, it was myself and Casey Nick Johnson who did it. When I very first started reading out Lucy Letby's replies to my questions, it did feel a bit strange to start with, but it was a long process. Obviously, you were there in court and I was in the witness box for a number of days. And again, it's just having that ability to kind of switch off and do the role and the job that you're there for. And it was a case of just reading off the transcript, but it did actually take me back to the interviews, you know, and some of the answers that she gave. You know, it did take me back to the time that we were sat in that interview room over at custody. But also it's hard for me because of who was in court. Obviously, there were families in court listening to her answers. And as a family liaison officer, I'd built up a rapport with some of those families. So for me, kind of playing that role and them hearing the answers she gave, because a lot of it, that was the first time they'd heard this information. And it was almost felt like me providing it to them, her answers, her explanations for things. And at times, it felt strange. But as I say, you know, as a police officer, you're there to do your role. As you say, it's my job. It was difficult, but overall, it went well.
But she didn't want you there.
I think she felt uneasy by me being in court, but there could have been a number of reasons for that. As I say, you know, I interviewed her, I spent a number of days with her, and whether that caused, you know, kind of maybe some flashbacks for her, whether it took her back to a time of when she was arrested that she struggled to deal with, whether she knew I was the person that was going to read out those transcripts and go through those interviews and give that information to the court and the families were there. You know, I can only guess that it must have been difficult for her to have seen me and for me to have been in that courtroom.
Or is it just another part of her trying to manipulate and decide that actually, you know, this is my courtroom and actually I'd rather you not be there?
Potentially, yeah. Potentially it could be, you know, could it be that, as you say, you know, that this is her time, the trial is about her, and she felt uneasy about other people who were in there and the roles or the parts they were going to play over the 9-10 month trial.
Yeah, so there's lots of words you can use to describe her. And I know your feelings are very strongly about this is about these families.
Yeah.
But I wonder, from being the person who sat with her for hour after hour after hour, and now in court for 10 months, whether you have formed a view of her.
I don't think I will ever be able to comprehend what Lucy Letby has actually done. I think the more and more you think about it, you know, you think of all these babies that she's hurt and that she's harmed and the grief that she's caused these families. I think the more you try to maybe, you can never understand it, but the more you try to accept it, it becomes more horrific, I guess, really. You know, just to think that anybody, another human being, could do that, you know, I mean, that is evil. What she has done is evil. You know, she's killed people, but not only that, what she's left and the harm that she's done and the upset she's caused to those families. It's horrendous.
So as we heard there, Liz, Danielle was the detective who spoke to Lucy Letby probably the most. And as you heard, Lucy Letby cooperated. She wasn't obstructive, she wasn't rude, she cooperated. But what she talks about is that detached way she behaved.
Yeah. She talks about the way she was quite calm in the interviews and she was quite cool and quite measured. And that's certainly how she came across in the witness box. You know, she didn't break down very often. You know, we saw a few tears when Dr. A came to give evidence in the dock. That was before she gave evidence, actually. And then we also saw a few tears when pictures of her house were shown on the screens in the courtroom. But she was pretty calm and cool throughout. And Danielle said that was a feature of Lucy Letby that, when she looks back, struck her as, you know, highly unusual because, you know, she's interviewed a lot of serious criminals and there's often a lot of emotion from people.
Yeah, I mean, she's interviewed some of the country's worst criminals. Barry Bunnell, convicted of abusing young boys involved in football. Ian Nord, a police officer accused and convicted of the gravest of crimes. Mm-hmm. And Danielle Stonier has sat opposite those people and been involved in their conviction. You know, her work has helped to convict them ultimately. But interesting then that she described her experience with Lucy Letby as surreal.
I mean, I think that's true for a lot of the detectives involved in this case that we've spoken to. None of them can quite believe that they have been part of someone that's committed such terrible, terrible crimes. You know, it's easy to look back and criticise the hospital in a way and say, you know, why did nobody pick up on what she was doing? But nobody wanted to believe that a nurse was capable of this. You know, obviously the police built a solid case against her and they knew that she was responsible. But still, I think they find it hard to understand how someone could have done this. And I think that's why Danielle talks about it being surreal, because Lucy Letby will go down in history as one of the most awful serial killers in modern times. And to think that you've spent a lot of time in your work with someone capable of that is bizarre.
Yeah, and I mean, the weight of the responsibility on her shoulders in that interview. And of course, she's not on her own. She's got a team behind her, another detective in the room. But obviously, she talked about the hours and hours and days and weeks of planning for that interview before she was brought in.
And trying to almost be one step ahead of and anticipate, what if she says this? Is she going to do this? And what am I going to ask after that? She talks about that quite a lot.
Yeah, she does. Something to say about Danielle Stonier is that not only is she a highly skilled and experienced investigator and interviewer, she's also a family liaison officer. So she's also working with the families in this case. She's highly invested. That's it for episode 55. You can catch more of our post-verdict episodes on Mail Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can give us a rating and you can share the podcast. You can also follow me at Liz Hull or send us an email at thetrialoflucyletby@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Lucy Letby Trial or follow me at Radio Caroline.
See you then.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.